Today I'm joined once again by Nico, a geopolitical analyst for geopoliticalmonitor.com and frequent contributor to the Corbett Report. Nico, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me back, James.
No problem. Nico, what have you seen in the last month or so, developments in the geopolitical sphere that you think are of note or interest for my listeners?
Well, some interesting trends geopolitically over the last month include the allegations or discussion over what some see as a South American arms race. And for a number of different reasons, I think that that is not the case. It's more an issue of Western alarm over Russian anti-Western, anti-American armed procurement. And then with the United States and Iran, we've seen what is essentially a diplomatic offensive after it's become apparent that the U.S. Has no ability to militarily invade. And then we've had the interesting situation where a number of cables have been severed, causing the internet to go down throughout the Middle East and much of Asia. We have the news report of the FBI program to work with business to essentially share intelligence and potentially have business on board were martial law to be declared in the United States. And then in Africa, we have the ongoing situation in Kenya, which is uncertain as to when and if it will be resolved. And then, interestingly, the situation in Chad, which has involved French interference.
All right, lots to cover. What would you like to start with?
Well, I'll start with the South American arms. So recently, and there's been some discussion of this over several years now, but recently it's come up again with articles in the New York Times and the Christian Science Monitor, where people have said that because of South American arms procurement, there is an ongoing South American arms race. The implication being that this would lead to instability in the region, potential conflict. But if you look behind the story that's put forward in the New York Times article and the Christian Science Monitor article, really what we have is not concern over arms procurement, which is an ongoing situation in any country that maintains a military, but alarm and concern over arms procurement, not from the United States, but from Russia. So the most notable example, and the one that people are most concerned about in the discussion over this issue, is Venezuelan arms procurement. And the New York Times article previously stated that Venezuela had ramped up its arms procurement at an alarming and significant rate. And while it's true Venezuela now with its oil wealth is spending more money on arms, what is important to note is that the figure used in calculating the percentage was actually the number of foreign arms, so non-US arms, that Venezuela in relation to other countries is purchasing. And this makes sense because the United States has put in an embargo on Venezuela and has refused to sell it arms. So when we see Western sources being concerned about a South American arms race, about arms procurement, that's really based on alarm over Russia offering to sell weapons, small arms. Recently, there's been the discussion of selling nuclear subs to Venezuela from Russia. So the Western news sources reflect Western concern over the Bolivarian Revolution, as Hugo Chavez, leader of Venezuela, terms it, in conjunction with Bolivia, with Nicaragua, and with other onside South American nations. So what we see here is the continuance of the loss of American might, American influence in South America, and the rise of an independent movement supported militarily by Russia, who wants to make a lot of money selling arms to counter U.S. dominance.
Interesting. Yes, definitely some spin behind those headlines. And Russian influence in the American continent militarily would be a large factor in the remilitarization of Russia. I noticed on geopoliticalmonitor.com, January 28th, 2008 weekly update, there was a report on Russian naval exercise that was taking place in the Atlantic. And I don't know if you saw this, but in the Japan Times on February 10th, 2008, they reported that a Russian bomber was detected violating Japanese airspace during those naval exercises. And I think that speaks to the growing militarization of Japan and encroachment on traditionally American territory, whether it be in South America or in Japanese airspace. I'm wondering if you can point to any other signs of growing Russian remilitarization in recent months.
Oh, absolutely. You see it all over. And the same issue with the air patrols and the violation of airspace has happened in Canada as well, where Russian planes have started to come close to Canadian airspace and be on the verge of violating it to test Canadian response times. So this is something we've seen all throughout the world. There have been numerous naval Air Force exercises. There's been the reassertion of the Russian first strike policy, or the policy that they will not rule out the first use of nuclear weapons. And in response, Western retired military generals reasserted the identical Western position. There's all sorts of talking. There's all sorts of military exercises. And then there's the attempt for Russia to reinvigorate its arms sale and its arms productions. So we've seen recently Russia, for the first time, overtaking the United States in the number of arms sold. So the U.S. sells about a third of the world arms, and Russia just recently has overpassed it, selling just slightly more, but also about a third.
Interesting. All right, let's move on to the Middle East. What can you tell us about the recent internet outages in the Middle East?
Well, it's hard to say. It's one of those things where there's a lot of speculation, and there's not a lot of concrete fact. But essentially what happened was a number of cables that went across the ocean floor were cut, two just off the coast of Egypt, two just off the coast of United Arab Emirates. And there's also a discussion of cables being cut connecting Sri Lanka. But as with any story of this nature, there's a lot of uncertainty, a lot of speculation. And it was reported as causing outages and slowed response time throughout India, throughout Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, and that whole region. But the speculation or the excitement around the story was that after all the cables being severed in different regions, and after Egypt saying that it had video evidence showing that there are no ships in the region where the cables were cut, so it was not an anchor, Egypt argued, that there would be a connection with Iran's recent announcement, and this announcement was reasserted more recently, that it would finally be going ahead with the oil bourse, which is a non-USD denominated oil exchange. And as with Iraq, who just prior to invasion started selling its oil in USD, Iran, which has already done that, would take this a step further and allow anyone to buy or sell oil in a currency other than the US dollar. And listeners who have been keeping up to date on monetary policy and the economic empire will understand that the exclusive sale of oil in USD is the linchpin, the foundation of the American dollar, the American economy, and American military might. So there's a lot of speculation that Iranian internet was affected and brought down, and that this coincidence, that right when they said they were going to set up the oil exchange, was a threat or an intimidation to other Middle Eastern countries who had been talking about and have been switching from selling oil in USD to other currencies, but have also been depegging their currencies with the USD due to the United States lowering interest rates, causing inflation in these Middle Eastern countries. So the speculation is that they're reminding everyone that they're in control. They are reminding the Middle Eastern countries that they are trying to maintain this hegemony, and then they would potentially be trying to prevent Iran from going ahead with this. Now, this is all speculation. It's uncertain. A number of reports have said that internet in Iran did not go down at all, or that it went down only slightly, or was only slowed down. So at this point, it's uncertain, and it will likely be some time before we know what did happen and why.
Well, certainly, regardless of whether or not there was foul play involved, I think it's important to note that the U.S. petrodollar hegemony is perhaps coming to an end. Let's move on and talk about Africa. I understand you have some information about developments in Kenya and in Chad.
The situation in Kenya is much the way it has been for recent weeks. And what happened, for those who haven't been keeping up to the story, there was an election in Kenya called, and the ruling party, the more dominant ethnic group led by Kibaki, rigged the election in order to win, when it was thought that Odinga, the opposition party leader, who is the leader of a smaller ethnic group, would have a good chance of winning that election. And there are all sorts of documented instances of electoral fraud. So this incited all sorts of rioting, all sorts of chaos, and Kibaki has taken a very strong stance in not giving concessions to the opposition and in asserting that he, in fact, did win the election fair and square. So there's all sorts of chaos, all sorts of rioting. There's speculation that there could be a separation or divide in the country, but Kofi Annan has come in to help mediate the dispute and help bring about a settlement. But despite that, we've seen continuing instability in the region. But what's a newer story, and in my mind, an interesting one that gives insight into Western interference or Western involvement in Africa, is the situation in Chad. And what has happened there is the rebels in the east along the border with Sudan are opposed to the current Chadian government, arguing that it's a fascist regime, a dictatorship. And with the threat of UN security troops coming in, backed by France, to help secure the Sudanese border, to help stabilize the region and reduce the problems going on in Sudan, they invaded the capital, heading west to attempt to overthrow the government and take over. And with help from French troops, they have a military base in the region, the government of Chad was able to repel the attack and send them retreating back to the east. But now the French forces, or the United Nations forces backed by France, are talking about sending troops in to stabilize the region. But the role would not necessarily be peacekeeping, which is the name that it would be used to describe the operation from the UN or Western perspective. But they would essentially be, one, protecting the Chadian regime to stabilize the economy and allow for the extraction of minerals and resources that are of value to Western companies and Western interests, and two, allow the Chadian government to pursue the rebels as they return to the east and support the Sudanese rebels on the other side of the border who are opposed to the Chadian rebels. So essentially, if France were to go in with military, quote, peacekeepers, unquote, it would essentially be stabilizing the regime to allow it to wipe out its enemies, who they would allege are fighting for the end of his dictatorial regime and a more democratic Chad.
So that would be based on, I believe, a non-binding resolution that France managed to get passed in the Security Council at the United Nations. Is that correct?
That's correct. France has been pushing to get that France-backed UN force in Chad. And the reason, in part in truth, but in part because of economic interests, is to stabilize the region. Now, keep in mind that Sudan, they have significant oil reserves as well, so there's that whole issue. And there's a divide between the Christian and ethnic religions in the south, and then the Muslims in the north. And the civil war resulted in a temporary border that essentially lined along the oil reserves. So there's all sorts of geopolitical maneuverings involved in Sudan, and that's spilling over into Chad to a certain extent.
I see. All right. Well, how about in America? What can you tell us about the recently released details of the FBI program to deputize business?
Well, a story has just come out exposing the InfraGuard program in the United States. And what that is an FBI program to unite with business, often large corporations, to share intelligence. And the suggestion is by the FBI that if business will provide the information, that the FBI wants to pursue their agenda, then in turn the FBI will tip off business when it knows of security threats or potentially economically significant events. And the concern around this program is that it's, one, eroding civil liberties by getting large business on side to do unconstitutional monitoring of the American population. But also there's concern about preparing business to participate in the implementation of martial law. For those who are not aware of the FEMA camps that are being built, I'd highly encourage you to go to geopoliticalmonitor.com and read the article on FEMA camps. It's a series of camps being set up to detain large numbers of people with no real explanation as to what purpose those camps would serve. There's all sorts of instances suggesting that martial law is being planned either as an inevitability or as a contingency, but this seems like it's just one more step in that direction to get big business on side so that when martial law is implemented, there will be a smooth transition. And the issue that arose this concern over martial law was a report by one person at a company who's involved in the program who said that there was the implication that in the instance of martial law or in the instance of a major security threat, that members of that company could go take violent and forceful action to take out that threat.
Interesting, and some very worrying signs of complicity between FBI and the private sector.
Very much so.
Nico, you mentioned the background or articles on your website. Can you tell us a little bit more about your website for listeners who are hearing your insight for the first time?
GeopoliticalMonitor.com is a website that provides unpropagandized, succinct information about geopolitical issues, about what's going on in the world, and also about covert operations, things that you won't hear in the mainstream press. So by providing both backgrounders that give a context to what's going on in the world, and also news updates and analysis, it aims to give people who are busy, don't have time to do all the research themselves, a full and comprehensive understanding of what's going on in the world today. And the website, again, is geopoliticalmonitor.com.
Yes, and I'd like to remind my listeners that a subscription can be obtained from that geopoliticalmonitor.com website for full access to the website. And listeners to the Corbett Report can use the coupon code JCorbett, J-C-O-R-B-E-T-T, to receive a discount on that subscription. Nico, thank you very much for joining us today.